Our speaker tonight is Linda Dill, and I'm so grateful she is here. She is currently undergoing treatment for breast cancer and sort of in between, so she's at a good point and said she would come and speak to us. So I'm not going to say much more so that you have time.
Okay, thank you very much for coming. And I've talked to several friends today, and they said, do your disclaimer, Linda, because you're not kind of with it sometimes. So this is my disclaimer. I'm in the middle of chemo, and I have another round 4 tomorrow out of 6. And I started taking steroids again this week because I have to do that to get ready for chemo. And they have this thing, what we call chemo brain. So you have a thought, and then you lose it. So if that happens, just try to guess what I'm trying to say and move on. I wrote took some notes, but I'm not good at following notes. But anyway, so that's my disclaimer. I've been married for 45 years this September. I actually thought that was a long, long time until I met with a lady today whose husband died a month ago, and she's had been married 65 years. And it was just such a delight hearing her talk about her husband. She's in the process of getting her house ready to sell and moving into a retirement center where she and her husband had picked out and planned because he wasn't supposed to be dying. But in talking with her and just listening to her stories and things, it was so evident of her love and respect she had for this man for 65 years. And I thought, you know, God, I want to finish like that. That's the way I want to finish. Unfortunately, I didn't start out like that. But before I get started again, I wanted to show you one thing. I wouldn't be a good grandmother if I didn't bring you a picture to show you of my grandchildren. They're great. We have 6. Our oldest granddaughter lives with Jesus. Our 5, we have the privilege of seeing regularly, and they actually go to church here. So I wanted to bring a picture of them. So when you see them, you can recognize them and say hi to them and just pick them out from the crowd. They range from age 2 to 11. So this is my picture of my grandchildren as drawn by Gracie. So make sure you pick them out. So has their names on it. So I wish I could say that we started off great. We started off very young, inexperienced, with very, very poor role models. I became a Christian at 16, and I questioned that for a long time, but God's really confirmed in my heart now that that was really when he drew me to him. However, I didn't have any role models. I didn't have anyone, a church home, or anyone to bring me in and to run alongside of me and to help me and to disciple me. I didn't know God's word or anything else. So I started this marriage. This is the home that I came from. My parents were married for 19 years, had 6 girls, and divorced. My father remarried and had a 7th girl. My mother remarried and had a son, her only son. And my mother was married for maybe 5 years or 3 years or so, and then she divorced. He was an alcoholic. He, I think accidentally, but set our house on fire with his drinking, set the sofa on fire. We never knew when we came home what life was going to be like, if the police were going to be there, if there was going to be, you know, pulling the phones out of the walls or chasing somebody with a butcher knife or, you know, whatever. And she divorced him finally, and then she remarried him. And at this point, I was in junior high school, should not have been dating, but was dating. I can remember my date coming to pick me up and my stepfather asking him if he could borrow $5. And then asking for a ride to the liquor store. So, you know, I was in 7 different elementary schools. Home was not safe, and I knew it. The third man she married had 3 sons, and my age and older. And to be honest, it was just a miracle that any of us girls, myself and the younger ones, survived without sexual abuse or anything like that. Fortunately, she was not married to him for a long time, but it was a hard time. And so home was not safe. It was not a place you bring your friends. It was not a place that was warm and inviting and welcoming or that you wanted to go to or anything else. However, this is the home my husband came from. And, in defense of my mother, if my mother were alive today, I think she would be diagnosed with bipolar or something like that. But back then, they didn't have those kind of things. I remember coming home and her talking to me and sitting at the table, chain smoking, and talking to herself and answering herself. And she really was not aware and had a hard life herself that she couldn't manage these girls or children. But my husband's came from the right side of the tracks. They had a gorgeous all-brick home, if you can imagine. His dad was a deacon in the Baptist church. He went to the same elementary school, junior high school, high school that all of his friends went to all their life, and then away to college with them. Everything was perfect. The house was beautiful. They had a living room that was gorgeous. But I soon found out that this living room, you would go into it, and it was if the pastor came by the house or someone really important came, you could go in there and sit, but the throw pillows weren't to be messed up or anything else. It's really funny. My mother-in-law is 85 years old now, and she lives close to us now. And my husband is taking care of her, and he and his sister, and he's over there at least five times a week. And there's a story that came back to us from my sister-in-law. She said Mom loves Ricky coming, but he's messing up her throw pillows on her sofa. And she would never say that to him because she wants his company and wants him to come, but she hasn't changed at all, you know? And so they had this beautiful home, and everything had to be perfect before anything happened. What we didn't know when we found out as time went on, his dad had an affair for 12 years, had multiple affairs with other women. There was alcoholism with both of them in the home. Their home was really very dysfunctional, just as dysfunctional as mine was. It just looked good on the outside and came packaged really well. So that was our role models of what we brought into this marriage. So for me, then getting married young the way we did, we had children young, and this is what home would be like for us. It would be perfect. We were on a tour of homes. It was a small house, but I was doing design work at that time. I had two other homes that were very large homes that were on this tour, and then our house was the small house, was showing what you could do with a small house and on a budget, was on the tour. If we had people over, if we had a Bible study in our home, if anything happened, it had to be to perfection. Now, inside the drawers and cabinets and closets don't look so good, and they still don't in my house. But the outside doesn't have to be as perfect. So that's what home became for us. It was about 10 years into our marriage, God brought us into a church home that really was teaching the Word and really started changing both of our hearts. And there were three things that happened in our life, I guess. One of the things that God taught me and started showing me was that God can use my mistakes for his purposes. The life verse that he gave me is Jeremiah 29:11, and I'm sure you've heard of this. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And that verse, I have it hanging actually still on my wall. It will hang in my house wherever I go for all of my life, I hope. Unless I get to a point where his mother is, and I don't know, and my girls do something different. But two other things, it was that verse he gave me and just inspired in my heart that he can use my mistakes. He can use that 10 or 12 or 15 years that we just had such a, all I can say, it was probably hell on earth for my family because I was hard to live with. My husband and I, our relationship was lack of respect and value. His thing he heard from his father is what mama doesn't know doesn't hurt her. So whatever, if I didn't know about it, it didn't hurt me. And I was like, this home will be like this and I will do anything. And that was my priority and that was my God. And so God brought two women into my life, and I would encourage you, you may be the older woman in someone else's life right now, and you don't even realize it. So think about that if that's where God has you. But if you need, and we all need it, regardless of what background we came from, find older women in your life who are walking with God, I've always told my children, if they have a problem with me as a mother, go get counsel, but don't get counsel from your little best friend who has a terrible relationship with her mother. Find somebody who has a great relationship with their daughter and go talk to them. You know, if they have troubles in their marriage, we're not the couple for them to come to because we're the in-laws and we don't need to hear about all their stuff. But I always say, go to Sherry and Carl Wilhelm. Go to this one and that one. Find a couple that you admire and that can help you with this. And they've said the same thing to us before. I love this church with the setup of the elders and the way we have some accountability. So find people that you can be accountable to. But God brought these two women into my life. The first one, Ken and Phyllis Ott, had the best relationship, loved God, and worked together as a team. Phyllis had, she had so much hospitality, it just oozed out. You know, I learned about having parties and having fun and entertaining with your fine china and your crystal and entertaining with paper plates and doing how God provided to do the fun things and stuff, and how to entertain strangers and to look for people who were hurting and who needed a friend. So I learned a lot from her about hospitality. The other one was Doreen Cooper, and she came along. I can remember we were in a small group, and they said they needed someone to drive with her up to Chattanooga every week. She was going to be, her book had come out, You Can Be the Wife of a Happy Husband. And she was going to be putting it on, I guess, videotape or something, whatever we had way back then. And she needed someone to drive up with her weekly, and I volunteered to do it. And I remember going on the way home telling my husband, why did I volunteer to do that? I can't do that. I just, you know, that would be too close to my, I didn't tell him this, but in my mind, it's too close to my personal space. She may really get to know me and see who I am. And I couldn't let that happen because I was trying to still, even to the Christian world, be this perfect wife and mother and homemaker and do it all right on my own. And I can remember going up there, I said, after I go one time, I'm going to tell her I just can't go because the kids need to be picked up from school and I can't get back in time. I'll make an excuse and I won't do it again the next week. It was a 10 or 12 week class. And it was like God just drew me in. I couldn't not go. It was like the conversations going up there, it wasn't threatening. I'm sure she did a lot of prayer before she went. I was left many a times in tears and heartbroken, but I became transparent and vulnerable and just let her into my heart and let her see what really was going on. It is important that you find someone you can trust and that loves God and that will let you be you, but will help let you work through the yucky stuff in your marriage. And your background may not be anything like what mine was, but we all have stuff and I guess this picture of what we take into a marriage, and we all need help sometimes in helping sift through that and get that out of the marriage. So those were the two things. The third thing that God used in my life was that first thing, the scripture, these two women. I remember when I was in the middle of working with these ladies, with these women, at the end of my time, there was one quote that I wrote down, and it's just something that came to my mind, and it stuck with me. It says, home is not a house, but where we are in the center of God's will as a family. And that's so true. It's not this house. It's where you are in the center of God's will. That's the most important thing. And the third thing is he took me into the world. Our daughters got involved in junior high school and high school. It was interesting because I was over here tonight before this in a packing meeting, and they're up now praying for this team going to Guatemala. And my little 11-year-old granddaughter is going on her first mission trip to Guatemala, and so we're very excited. But I remember when her mom went on her first one at 11. But he took us into the world. Our daughters got involved with missions and going to on different mission trips and things, and seeing things from God's perspective, not from just what they learned from, you know, suburban Roswell, Alpharetta, Johns Creek. And so he took us into the world. And one of the places we went, I remember going to Haiti. And we were there, and we were working with the missionaries and doing lots of things. And we came back home, and one of the missionary families came and visited us in our home. And the little mom is sitting there, and she's looking around over my kitchen cabinets, and she's looking at different things. And she sees the little tin Jeep I bought in Haiti and the egg baskets I had sprayed bright colors and all this stuff. And she looked at me, and she said, Linda, why didn't you tell us you we're a decorator, or you could do this. She said, we could fix our home like this. That's from our country. And I said, I thought you were missionaries. To me, in my mind, missionaries gave up everything and left and went and, you know, took their coffin with them, you know. But she said, women are women no matter where we are and what we have. And she said, we want to make our homes inviting for our family and welcoming for people who come in. And that really stuck with me. Again, when we were in, we went then to Colombia, South America. And we were on this compound, it's called the Vinca, and we had all these young missionary wives and families, and they lived in these houses that the concrete block walls came up to about here, and they were open so the air could circulate, and we had to sleep under mosquito nets so the bats wouldn't get us and stuff. And several of these moms were going into town one day, and our team was staying behind. We were there doing construction work and stuff. And one of the moms called me over and said, I heard you are a decorator. And I said, yeah. And she said, my mom sent me, this is when the country look was really in. She had a little package. My mom sent me this fabric. And I want to make my home updated and look, and use this like the country look. And I'm like, okay. And so they left and they were off. And I thought, God, what can we do? I took a couple of manila folders that I found over in the school, and we cut some stencils out. That was when stenciling was in. I found two or three little colors of paint, and we actually mixed some of the clay and stuff with them to make different colors. And I got the girls from our team, and we went in, and we stenciled around her kitchen and around that. We did with some glue and stuff and tape and different things like that, made her some cute little curtains to draw back. Now, this is a mom that her kids were allergic to the algae in the water. To bathe her kids at night, it was a 3-hour process. She had to boil the water and get that, you know, so that, and then let the water cool down and then put the children in and bathe them, and it was a 3-hour process. And she wanted her house to be decorated in the country look. I got letters, this was before email time, letters back back in the 80s, kept getting letters back from all the other moms on that compound. They had used that same stencil and had taken those ideas and were doing all their houses around and having so much fun with it. So no matter where you are or what you have, women are women, and we want our homes to reflect us and to be beautiful. And that was okay. In India, we had a team of 36 high school and college students were there for the summer. And at the end of the summer, we had to cook on open fire, boil our water to drink it, because we only had water 2 hours a day, and we saw the nationals down bathing in it upstream. And so we knew we needed to boil it to drink. And everybody brought their own plate and cup that we washed out every night in this water, so we didn't have any extra plates or dishes to do a party. But the kids wanted to do a party for the nationals and have them in. Well, they had seen all summer how we had been doing different fun things of just making it home and personal and for us, our dinners, and making centerpieces out of the banana leaves and all that stuff. So we went and collected the girls came in with banana leaves and said, these are going to be our plates. And they had banana leaf plates and did this big banquet for these nationals with stuff we found. Now, this was a dirt floor house we were sleeping in, with rats in the daytime too, and so it wasn't out in the bush, so there wasn't a lot to choose from. But you can make your home, it can be as beautiful as you want it to be. So be creative, think outside the box. Hospitality does not take place in a perfect world. It takes place in the midst of chaos sometimes. Entertaining is trying to impress. Hospitality is trying to bless. So when you think of those people that you want to have into your home and that you bring into your home, think about, are you trying to impress them or am I trying to bless them? There's a young couple we're getting ready to have over to our house, and she's been going through coming and sitting with me during chemo, and because she's just come to know the Lord, and we've just had some great times of just talking. I'm kind of her older, I'm her older woman. So she and her husband are getting ready to, we're having them over for dinner coming up in the next couple of weeks. And you know, she was like, I don't know if we'll be able to invite you back to our house because we have two dogs and we have this and we have that. And I'm like, that doesn't matter. You know, so I know I'm getting the clues there that I need to make sure that I make this simple and not threatening and just fun for them, you know, and show them that we're actually doing lasagna from Costco's and, you know, making it just, and I'm letting her bring a salad. So let your friends bring something, you know, make it simple. There's other friends, my sister, when I go to her house, you know, she loves to come to my house and drink out of my Waterford crystal, and which my husband hates for that because he has to help wash it. But, and that kind of stuff. So you've got to decide, you know, kind of think who are the people coming in. There's two scriptures, Romans 12:13. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. The other one is Hebrews 13:2. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. So my question to you would be, have people in your home? My statement to you would be, how many people's homes do you get invited into? We rarely get invited into someone's home for dinner. We get calls, hey, can you meet us for dinner at so-and-so restaurant? Do y'all want to go out to lunch with us after church? I love it when we get invited in. But I can't sit around and wait to be invited in. I have to do the inviting. And many times we have friends we've had over numerous times and not been invited back. We've had some friends, we invite them and they invite right back. But, you know, I bet you could count on your two hands how many times you've been invited to someone's dinner in their home in the past 5 years. I bet most of you could. I probably could. And use your homes. Like, I love the idea of doing these Bible studies in the homes. We did that Dare Respects in our home in the spring, and it's just, it sets such a different tone and atmosphere. I love that. So home is a place that gives birth to ideas and attitudes. It's a place of healing over great loss, of having joy and peace during that healing. For me, I want my home to be inviting. I want people to come in and feel like they can prop their feet up on the coffee table and just sit there. And by the way, there's three girls here that were in my group this spring. And that black chair that was over on the side next to the fireplace, it was always the last chair to be taken, is out. It was very uncomfortable and too small and squatty. It was my great-grandfather's chair, but I've passed it on to a niece now where it can get good use. Because I want it to be, I watched that over week after week, and I'm like, that chair's not real comfortable. That's not pulling people into the group and into the circle and stuff. So I want my home to be inviting. We've had dances and parties, and I really mean dances. We've taken the furniture out of the living room, our daughters have, and moved it into the garage and taken plywood and painted it black and put it down in the living room floor to do a swing dance, to do, what kind of dance did they do back when they were in? Swing dance was their college years, whatever they did in their high school years. And to do dances and things, we've had them take the dining room furniture out of our dining room and make a platform up on paint cans and do a birthday party for all girls that's like a fashion show, and they had to come up with their own things and stuff and crazy things. You know, we wanted our kids to know that home was a safe place and a place for them to bring. We've had weddings at our house. We've played and we've prayed at our house. And we've cried at our house. Each home has a different season of life. I can remember, this may not work for you, but it's a great idea for our family in this season of life where we were. When our girls became junior high school, I can remember my mother-in-law in the dining room. She has this gorgeous china cabinet with beautiful china and crystal in it, but she holds it hostage. She has never, in our 45 years of marriage, used that china and crystal or the silverware that goes with it. One time when we were going to Albany, Georgia, where they're from, and my oldest daughter was taking a boyfriend that was a potential mate, We ate in the dining room, but we used the middle of the road china or dishes, not the Melmac from the kitchen and not the china from the china cabinet, but this middle of the road. And that's the only time we've ever used that even. And middle of the road silver, and we ate in the dining room. We've never eaten in there again. We moved them from Albany to here to Atlanta, and they live not far away from us, like I said. I decided when they moved here, we were going to use her dining room. And that was my plan for her. I took a got a big vinyl tablecloth and took it over there. We cooked the meal, my daughters and I and the grandchildren. And we took paper plates and all this stuff. We sat around that table. We had so much fun, and we talked and we laughed. And she and her husband, my father-in-law, just seemed to enjoy it so much. And about 3 months later, I said, we're going to come over and do the same thing again. You know, it was funny. She couldn't find that tablecloth. And there was excuse after excuse after excuse after excuse. We never did it again. And that tablecloth has never been seen. And so we don't go there for meals or anything. You know, her stuff is held hostage. She has beautiful stuff, and she's never used it. Use what you have. So I decided when we were going 26 years ago, when we were building a house in Crabapple, we were in a small apartment, and we decided that we were going to take our kitchen and make it into a place to, we put two chairs in there, and we have this in our house now. And like I said, this is a season of life thing. My daughter, who has a two-year-old, can't do this quite yet, but she's dying to tear up her carpet and put wood floors down and him to get three or four so she can do this. But we put the two chairs in the little kitchen with a table between them and the ottoman there. My husband can come in from work, sit down while I'm cooking meals and all that stuff. When we have people over, that's where everybody gathers around that barn and those lounge chairs there. And we just all gather in the kitchen. And it makes it for a fun, very warm and welcoming dinner. We made our dining room with just a big plantation table. You know, if from a design perspective, the table's bigger than the rug. It doesn't match up. From my perspective, it is fabulous and wonderful for our family and fits us great. I have slip covers that go on the chairs that I can throw in the washing machine. And I've taken off all the sideboards from around the room so you can actually, because I have two son-in-laws that are, well, we're a big family anyway, but can walk around and we all are. And so it's great for us, but we eat our main meals every day in our dining room. I did not want my grandchildren to say, my grandmother held her stuff hostage, or we never used it, or it was saved for somebody else more special. You know, it's for us. It's for my husband and for me. So it's great. We love that. So think outside the box of some things you can do. I'm going to give you a couple of just some fun kind of things that we've done. Over the years, one of the first things that you need to do is make a place for your husband. Your husband needs a place that he knows is his chair. My husband has a big green upholstered chair with an ottoman, and when we're there, I mean, I always just reserve that chair. I mean, I sit in my place and he sits there, and that's where he watches TV. That's where he does his quiet time in the morning. You know, and that's his. Both my son-in-laws, one of them has not figured out when they come over sometimes that that's his place. The other one kind of knows that and understands it, you know. But it's interesting because he's got a place that he can keep his books and stuff next to, and it's kind of his place. He needs a place for his office, for his computer and his paperwork and that kind of stuff, that he, some space of his own. Make sure your husband has some space of your own. And what he thinks does matter. You may think he doesn't care about design and decorating. And a lot of wives say, oh, well, my husband will just let me do anything. He doesn't matter. Or he has no taste, so therefore I think I can do it all. You know, one of the things I tell wives when I go into homes and people is get a shoebox, just an old shoebox like this. Facebook, because I know all of you Facebook, I don't, but you do. Facebook your friends and say, I want your old magazines. Take a magazine like this. Give your husband a shoebox, and you take a shoebox. This is your homework assignment, and it's a fun one. So take your magazines and just look through it, and you say, oh, I like the way that this, the lighting is balanced in this room and looks good, or these chairs look really cozy by that fireplace. Take your little thing, cut it out, put it in the shoebox. Are you, you're laughing at me. I have, yeah. I know my young girl I'm discipling keeps telling me that. She brings her computer for chemo every day. And I've tried. Anyway, okay, so just tear it out. But my point is, if you and your husband do this for 2 or 3 months, just make it fun for him. It's a fun date night. Let him throw stuff in there. You throw stuff in there. A month later, do a nice romantic dinner for the two of you and bring your box to the table and say what you like about this. You're going to find out he has color preferences. He has style preferences. He has comfort presence. Preferences and everything else. So find out what he really does like and let him know that his opinion does matter and it does count. So that's just a good fun kind of thing to do. Twice a year, I with my mind the way it goes and with decorating and stuff, I could drive my family crazy. And so if you can imagine that. And I could always have us in a project. And fortunately, my husband is a person who will do projects with me and be patient with me and say, if I tell him what measurement I want, I don't use the saws, he uses the saws, but I give him the measurements and stuff. So we've done lots of projects. But I learned, this was years ago with these women that I was working with, how important it is to not have your home always in chaos, and that when I'm always in a project and wanting something more, I'm saying to my husband, how God's providing through you, it's not enough. Because some of those things we couldn't afford, we didn't need to do, they weren't in our budget, I didn't consult him on, you know, whatever, all of those things. So what I started doing was I take a notebook like this, and we thought through, I asked him, when are the best times for us to get into a project? And we talked about January and February because it's not the holidays, it's not any major events, it's cold, it's a good time. Or September and October, it's after summer vacation, people have come through and visited, and we've visited with families and that kind of stuff. And you may need to pick one or the other, not both times. But what I would do is walk through my house and make a dream list. I kind of split it down 3 ways. This is what I would love to do. This is what we really can do after talking with my husband. And this is kind of delegated out. When our girls were living at home, you know, I'd say, you're going to do this, this, and this. And we had 3 months or 2 months to do it in. And so I'd walk through the house and make a dream list. And then Ricky and I would sit down with this list. It may be the living room. I wanted new throw pillows. I wanted that chair replaced. I wanted, a ceiling fan replaced. It may be I want the blinds cleaned, or something washed and windows washed, or the kitchen remodeled. It could be a big project, a little project. We sat down, and sometimes Ricky would say, you know, Linda, that's a big project. I know that's important to you. And I talked with him about not kind of squashing our dreams, but letting us dream. But some of the things, and I always hate it when he said, well, we just can't afford that. Almost, are you crazy? And he didn't say it quite like that, but it felt like that. And instead, now he's learned to say, you know, that's a great idea. I can see that would be something you'd really like to have done. Let's start saving toward that. Or that may be something we could do in a year and a half or something. You know, it's something that doesn't happen right now. I mean, right now my husband's not working. He's lost his job like a lot of other men have here. So, but you know what? We still do this because there's things that we have in our home already. And we're getting ready to start doing this because there's a major event coming up with some surgery and stuff for me that we want to get a few things done before then. So we would talk through, can we afford it? Can it not be? Some of the things got marked off the list right away or put down for next year or something like that. And then it was like, okay, the girls can clean the blinds. The girls can wash the baseboards down. Ricky will agree to clean the garage out, you know. And I can make the throw pillows or do this or do that. So we kind of delegated it out. And then we knew that when we come home and some of our weekend time and stuff was spent on doing those projects, and that was great. But it was just for a short time frame. We were talking 8 weekends, you know, or so. And then after that time frame was up, this is what I always do. I'd go through and tear that page out and throw it away. Because if it's sitting there, I look at what hasn't been done instead of what has been done. And I think about, oh, well, we didn't succeed. We didn't do this. And you know what? Half the time, the things that were put on the list the next year are not even the same things. half the time Ricky's learned that some of my ideas and things give me 2 days or a day, and they've changed already, or I figured it out that wasn't a good idea or whatever. So that's a great way. I mean, give your husband some, right? And we think sometimes I'm sounding like I know it all and like I'm like down. I don't want to sound like I'm putting down men and putting down my husband. I have high respect for my husband. He is so loving and caring, and if you, but he, you know what? He hasn't always been like that. I haven't always been like I am. So we both change together, but it's taken time for us to learn to not say the nevers and you always and do the dirty fighting and all that stuff. That takes time, and that's where having that godly woman in your life, taking classes like Wisdom for Wives. I mean, I took this the first time, I don't know, right after I came to Perimeter. This is huge. This is great. Don't close your mind to the things you're hearing, you know, because God's word is true. And you look it up in scripture yourself. So anyway, think outside the box. Paint goes a long way. You can, I've got to hurry up here and let you girls go. So I love Goodwill. One of my favorite pieces in my house, I don't have any new pieces hardly in my house. There's very few new pieces of furniture or things in my house. Except for lately, because I've been doing a lot of stuff for clients, Home Goods has become my very favorite store. $29 lamps, I mean, wow. You know, but Goodwill is great. Laura bought a really cute goldy brass chandelier for $3 at Goodwill, spray painted it with white paint, painted orange paint over it, tied orange and white polka dot bows on it, and, you know, the Christmas garland you get that looks like crystals, strung that around it, put it in Grace's room. It's one of my favorite things in their house. Cute as a button. Cost her about $6 with the ribbon and the light and the paint. I have a chest in my kitchen that's painted striped, different colors all the way around. You know, it kind of looks like the colors that are here. I got it from for $15. It's when the school did their big garage sale thing a few years ago over at some big building. And it sat over there for 2 days, and nobody bought it. It was $15. The veneer was peeling off of it. It's an old dresser. The handles looked awful on it, and I'm like, oh, that thing is just calling me. You know, I've got, I guess I have to buy it. So $15, I take it home and, you know, sand it down. Ricky, my husband's great with helping me. He sands stuff down for me and all, and then paint it with primer, black paint all around, and then take just my wall paints in the house. So none of the paint costs me anything, and stripe it around and then go to Hobby Lobby. Everything's on sale, 50% off every few weeks, every other week, you know. Black and white polka dot knobs on it. It's one of my favorite pieces, and it costs about $20 at the most, you know, with it. So it's a great piece. We've moved cars out of our garage, and where all this paint and stuff is, take paint drop cloths and staple them around, and had big Thanksgiving dinners out there with 45 people. We had a door we took down, and we covered it with some scrap beadboard we had and made a king-size headboard for Lauren Drew. So don't be afraid to mix things. I always tell people, you know, when we start decorating, we have a tendency we want to do the kids' rooms first because kids deserve it, because kids need the cute room, and all their friends have the cute room. And probably some of it is because it's inexpensive to do and it's attainable to do. But I always tell women, do your bedroom first. The master bedroom is the place that you and your husband go and spend your most intimate time and have probably some of your best conversations and things. Do your master bedroom. Make it warm and inviting and a place of refuge for him. Do your kitchen second. That's the center of your family where they gather and they come around and do that. Do the kids' rooms after that. So thank God for how he provides for you through your husbands. That was a huge concept that took me a long time to really grasp and understand. I wanted bigger. I wanted better. I wanted what they had. I wanted this. I wanted to look like this. I wanted it perfect. Thank God for how he provides through your husband. This lady that's 80-something years old that had been married 65 years told me yesterday, she said, she was talking about when her husband was going to get ready to retire. She said, I told Don when we've had plenty and when we've had nothing and not enough, we've still lived the same life and we've been happy and trusted God. What does it matter? What does it matter? You know, I'm in a place now where I am facing, you know, a double mastectomy, chemo, and then radiation and all this stuff. I'm not working a whole lot. My husband's lost his job. We have been overwhelmed at how God has provided. We have just been overwhelmed anonymously and how he has providing and meeting our every need. And so if you trust God and trust him that he knows what job your husband has and how much he makes, and you run with him and encourage him and nurture him, it's going to make a huge difference. We can't do it all. Leave time for the unexpected. Are you a home builder? That's an important thing. What do you want your children and your husband when you've been married 30 years, 40 years, 50? I don't think anybody else in here except for maybe Barb's been married the 45, maybe you close to it. Right. So what do you want your husband and your children to say about your home when they look back on it? What do you want them to remember, to think about? The smells, the sounds, the things. Center your home around people, not things. And be yourself and trust God. And I'm going to share this one last thing. I asked my two daughters today. I always do it before I come to this class. And I asked my husband, what do you remember most about our home? And they seemed to forget that I asked them a year and a half ago when I spoke. So the interesting thing is my husband said, it's a place for me to come and be myself. It's a place for me to look forward to coming home to. Our first 10 years of marriage, he could not have said that. And I know that in my heart. Maybe probably even our first 15 years of marriage. He looks forward to that now. And my daughter said, and my husband said, they remember the people who came to live with us. We had 5 Libyan refugees live with us for 3 months. We had a Bosnian family of 3 live with us for 4 months. We had Ethiopians live with us, this one live with us, that one live with us. They remember those times because we worked together and pulled together and prayed together as a family and did that as a family. It was a ministry as a family. They remember the fun parties and their friends being in there. I asked the girls, what do they think about their homes? And Laura said, "And what's been her favorite times? And she said the things that she and Drew have done together as a couple and ministering and having their small groups in, having their neighborhood in, getting to know people from the school, the tea party in the public school. Grace and Laura did a tea party at Christmas time and had invited all the girls and mothers in their in Grace's class. And those are the things they remember, bringing their children home. Many of my grandchildren, we didn't know how long we would have them. So that was a great time for them. Just their kids' friends and that kind of thing. And the thing I want to leave you with, you know, we've had all these events in our homes. I think for me, the most meaningful and thing I remember the most is in Jennifer and Alex's home. Our oldest granddaughter would be 13. She died at 3. And God gave us an incredible opportunity of the morning she died. She was in her daddy's arms in their bedroom. She was her mother kneeling at her side. Her little one-year-old sister, she waited. God waited until Lizzie Kay woke up and came scampering in and was sitting there rubbing her feet. And my husband and I were there, and my daughter was there, and we were reading scripture to her. We remember the last time she smiled, which had been about a year and a half before. She'd been under hospice care and had suffered a lot. And she was there in her daddy's arms, and we knew that the time was coming. The hospice nurse had not shown up, and she should have been there before, but God knew we needed to be there, just our family. My son-in-law's parents had come, but they left to go to Chick-fil-A to get breakfast for us all because they couldn't handle the emotions of it as non-believers and couldn't understand the joy and the tears of joy we had. And all. And so God gave us that quiet little time there with just Leanna. And she took her last breaths and she smiled, the biggest smile. And then she smiled again, and then she smiled again. And my daughter Jennifer said, "Run, Leanna, run to Jesus." And the girls started singing, "This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad. What is your home going to be like when you've been married and when you're leaving and gone? What are your children going to remember?" It's been incredible through this cancer thing, the emails I've gotten from college friends of our daughters and things they've said. One girl said, "Being in your home was a refuge for me." And she said, "You'll never know, that was the best time of my life." And, you know, it's for our kids. It's for you. It can be beautiful, whether you're in a tent or whether you're in a great, huge home. Some of you have homes five times the size of mine, I'm sure. It doesn't matter the size or the budget or anything. It's what you choose to make of it. But it's also most important, God's going to lead you through your husband's and what he thinks and his opinions. Bring him on board with it. He will love it, and it will make your marriage stronger. Thank you.